Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave, and we're just going to get right to it. This is our experimental, one of them, a three-hour show test run before we start the three-hour show in February. And we're not even going to do any theme music because we want to make sure that you hear who our first guest is today. So we're going to go right to it. Larry Carlton from Larry Carlton Plays, The Sound of Philadelphia, a tribute to, Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. Here we go on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy.
Thank you.
the guest on his way, and the inspiration. It's all happening on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woohoo! Thank you. Holy cannoli, Aunt Ruby. Woohoo! Good stuff on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. It's been a wild day so far. Oh, someday we'll write a book. Carl Filipiak is who you just heard. 2 p.m., the name of the track from Peripheral Vision from 2000. Carl is the Art of Life recording artist that we're proud to call our own in Baltimore. Baltimore Ravens, something else. No, just kidding. We love our Ravens. Not happy about Sunday, but next year. Carl Filipiak, we needed to play him just because this hour is going to be, I guess you would say, predominantly guitar heavy. Now, here's the story about Larry Carlton. I don't usually do this because I'm quite meticulous about scheduling, but I got it wrong today. Larry is coming your way next hour, and I had thought that I was going to have him during the first hour. No problem. Just talked to his management, and we got that cleared up. I feel a little blonde right now, but I have no excuse because I'm not a real blonde. But anyway, Larry is coming your way next hour. Back to Carl. I want to tell you that he is a master guitarist. He's a teacher. He's an author. He is a heralded, that's tough to say, picker, Jazz's magazine, all about jazz. Everybody and his mama has taken note of Carl Filipiak, and yet he still lives in Baltimore, and he plays the local arenas, and he blows people away everywhere. He's internationally known, but this is why I love this town, because these folks who are known in France and Africa, all over Europe, all over Latin America, some of them decide to live here in the Baltimore, D.C. area, and it kills me and it delights me. CarlFilipiak.com, that's FilipiAk.com, has more information for you. One of Carl's inspirations, as well as one of Larry Carlton's inspirations we heard from, that was about the third track, Wes Montgomery, 4-on-6, from the artistry of Wes Montgomery, but actually originally on Smokin' at the Half Note in 1965. Now, I'll tell you, that the whole album has its own scenario. It was re-recorded. It was reissued. Suffice it to say this, that 4-on-6 and Smokin' at the Half Note featured a really important trio, the Wynton Kelly Trio. Wynton on piano, Paul Chambers on bass, Jimmy Cobb on drums. Paul and Jimmy were the rhythm section for Miles Davis. This was a landmark album, so much so that folks call it one of the best ever in jazz. And just as a side note, Pat Metheny has said that when he heard this album, it changed his world. A lot of people have said the same thing. Wes Montgomery, a lot of people have said that Wes Montgomery was the deciding factor for them to pursue a career in jazz. So, there you go. And Larry Carlton, two tracks from Larry Carlton Plays the Sounds of Philadelphia. And there is more to that title than just that, a tribute to Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. And that's important to note because you see it abbreviated sometimes, and I'm going to ask Larry about that. We heard Mighty Love and Could I Be Fallen in Love, Spinner's Tunes, that I think that you'll recall. You know, it's not necessarily something that I do every day when there is a jazz artist who delves into the R&B world, but Larry Carlton, in case you don't know, has so much credibility and so much passion. He has worked with so many as far as being a recording session artist is concerned, let alone his solo work. He knows all of this work. He's worked in every genre. When we get to who specifically he has worked with, folks that you might not know, folks that are living and dead, it's going to blow your mind, because when you delve into the career of Larry Carlton, I don't think ain't nobody got more credibility to play giant recordings that Gamble and Huff issued back in the day. Oh my gosh, just a really cool CD, and we'll talk about that. And let's get to more music while we're waiting for Larry Carlton. And I'm going to tell you too, we have an amazing artist coming your way at 3 o'clock, Ron Kearns. He is based in the D.C. area, one of these Renaissance guys. I just shake my head at somebody who is an educator, a sax man extraordinaire, a published author, a mentor to so many. Wait till you hear the work that Ron Kearns has turned out. You are going to love it. This is a really cool show. And we're going to get to another really cool guitar player. This is one of these guys that back in the 80s, when I was in Vero Beach, Florida, at a radio station, when I heard Chet Atkins put out a CD called Stay Tuned, and it was actually LP back then. He had George Benson, he had Larry Carlton, and he had this guy on his album, and it just blew my socks off, reacquainted me with all the reasons why I love jazz. This is Earl Klew from The Spice of Life and Morning in Rio on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Tasty.
Thank you.
songs back to back, and may we just say that having Veronica Nunn on Cool Jazz Conversations last night was a treat and a half. Veronica Nunn, if that name rings a bell to you, you might know that she has spent about 20 years with Michael Franks in the recording studio and on the road. They have this undeniable chemistry, but Veronica Nunn on her own has always been considered, and this is monumental, from almost the first day she stepped in New York City from Arkansas. She got a job at Gimbel's so she could pay her way as a theology student in college. She turned down Juilliard. She turned down Berkeley. She wanted to major in theology. And very quickly, she made the rounds of the clubs, got introduced to Big Nick Nicholas, who was instrumental in making sure Veronica got to know the A-plus players. And then within a short time, Veronica was known as an A-list go-to singer. That's who you called first, as evidence from that song, Rendezvous in Rio from The Art of Michael Franks. Mercy. Just so you know, she's got workshops going on performance etiquette. She is so out of the box as far as thinking is concerned. Go to Veronica Nunn, NUNN.com, and find out more. You should know that, first of all, her husband, Travis Shook, has a new CD just about on the way, and we're going to be hopefully talking to Travis down the road. And come springtime, there is another tour with Michael Franks. She is a sweetie. She's a major talent, and we were thrilled to have her on Cool Jazz Conversations last night. Just so you know, Larry Carlton comes your way at the top of this next hour. I got things kaflooey. Hopefully that won't happen again. Now, I know that there have been a couple of no-shows in the time that we've been doing this blog talk radio scenario. This is a different story. Larry and his folks assumed, since I wrote it down to them, that 2 o'clock Eastern time was going to be the time. I don't know why I thought it was 1. It's okay. He'll be here. Earl Clue, we heard from. Morning in Rio. Got to get that Brazilian vibe going on from the Spice of Life. Check this out. You can hear Morning in Rio at Earl Clue's website. That's not the check this out part of this little blurb. Earl's Weekend of Jazz comes up April the 4th through the 14th at the Broadmoor in Colorado. He's been doing them for a couple of years now. He's got another one in November. But I just found out that he's going to be part of the Jamaica Jazz and Blues Festival happening on the 26th through the 28th in the next few days. And I'm not quite sure how jazz and blues plays into this, but the folks that Earl plays with at this festival, CeeLo Green, Celine Dion, and Shaggy. It's cool, but I'm wondering, I know that Earl's jazz, just saying, you know how that goes. So EarlClue.com has more information about that. Let us turn our attention while we're waiting for Larry Carlton. And don't forget, Ron Kearns comes your way at 3 o'clock, one of the sax masters, certainly in our region, and again, internationally known, and you'll find out why. But over the weekend, it was a big deal. Saw Red Tails. If you haven't seen it, for the love of all that's good and holy, go see that movie. Oh, my gosh. It was a packed theater. Needless to say, $19.1 million it made at the box office. It was second at the box this weekend. We're so happy. But somebody made a good point on Facebook. See it this week and astound those who thought maybe it was just a weekend fluke. Go see this movie. It is a pivotal part of American history, but international audiences can absolutely get into the story. Just George Lucas did an amazing job. Everybody who was in the cast, Anthony Hemingway as a director, oh my God, just amazing. So I thought I would do a couple of the expression killing two birds with one stone. My good friend Kirk Kadish, it was his birthday yesterday. Happy birthday to Kirk, one of these great keyboard players who has been involved in the Army for quite a while, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But he has something from Tradewinds that he did a few years ago. It's called Free Flight. And I heard it this morning, and I thought, you know what? I just want to play that as a love song to everybody associated with Red Tails. You will love this song on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
all things going so right. Watching all the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my
another song by Vera No, didn't you? Oh my goodness. We had the lovely Lynn Vera No and Ken Avis, respectively on vocals and guitar, on the show last Thursday, and it was just so wonderful, and we were looking forward to seeing them at Andy Musique in Baltimore, and matter of fact, Debbie Poole has checked in to our chat room today. Debbie Poole and I went to see them on Saturday night, and Vera No is just mind-blowing. You just heard Lynn and Company do Blue Skies, and that's from the CD Joie de Vivre, and it truly was the joy of life when you get a chance to see this group in progress. David Rosenblatt on another guitar and Pete Welby on drums. It was just enough. And Lynn is just, she is this breath of fresh air. You rarely see anybody who so enjoys what she does. She's sensual, she's funny, she's down to earth. She gets into the moment of the song. Ken clearly loves her. He's playing guitar next to her. David's next to him. The venue is just incredible. If you ever get a chance to come to Baltimore, go to Andy Musique and check it out. It's a little like being in Europe in the middle of a blue-collar American city. It's just wonderful. And nice to know that Vera No is out there playing the kind of hybrid jazz, let's just call it what it is, shall we, that they do. Really wonderful stuff. We also heard from Kirk Kadish. Interesting guy. Great guy. Just had a birthday yesterday. Kirk does ambient. He does contemporary jazz. Really wonderful on the keyboard. Has been involved in the Army in this capacity. Actually, he was in the Army. Now he is in the field band based in D.C. He was born in Detroit, grew up there, lived in Santa Fe, New Mexico, also lived in Nashville. A whole bunch of influences, and I'm not sure how it translated for Kirk, Because when you see him, he looks like Joe who lives next door to you, but there's all this wealth of music that comes out of him. He also has an ambient electronica CD called Arterial Flow with the Australian composer Jan Slater, if you want to check that out. And he's got another project out called Still Bill, Part 1 and 2, about Bill Evans. So he lays homage to the straight-ahead path that he has. He loves jazz. He loves contemporary jazz as well, and he loves the ambience in music. And it's really healing when you get a hold of Tradewinds as well as his other works. It's quite compelling what that music is able to do to you. We've talked about this so much, about the healing power of music. Oh, my gosh. And who knows more about that than Larry Carlton? Coming your way at 2 o'clock. Yes, I know he was supposed to be here this hour, but not because of what he knew. It was my mistake. Just want to put that out there one more time. So let's get to a track, shall we? And this is the reason, honestly, why I wanted Larry Carlton to be on the show. I'm so enamored, as you might suspect, being a Philadelphia native, that he loved this music from Gamble and Huff so much that he decided to do Larry Carlton Plays the Sound of Philadelphia. So we've played a couple of tracks already, and I want to save one significant track while he's here because he's only going to be able to stay with us maybe about 30 minutes or so. But I thought this is a pretty cool scenario for a guy from California who now lives in Nashville to get involved in Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes and that whole Teddy Pendergrass vibe. Bad luck. I just love this. Here we are on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Enjoy this. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
I remember my mama had some great advice. So I thought I'd put it into the words of this song. I can still hear her saying it. Boy, oh, I see you sitting up there all alone, crying your eyes out, 'cause the woman that you love is gone. Oh, and there's gonna be a whole lot of trouble in your life. Listen to me, get up off of your knees, 'cause only the strong survive. She said, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. God is strong. Hold on. Hold on. Don't ride off with your head hung down. I wouldn't let the little girl know. Wouldn't let her know that you made me feel like a clown. Now there's a whole lot of girls looking for a good man like you.
Whole lot of girls.
Oh, but you'll never meet them if you give up now and say your life is through. Then she said, oh, only the strong survive. Only the strong survive. Gotta be a man.
Only the strong survive. Well, you think about that song. That that just lends itself to all sorts of life stories, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. From the CD, Larry Carlton Plays the Sound of Philadelphia. And actually, the addendum to that particular title is a tribute to Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. And actually, we heard a couple of tracks. We also heard Bad Luck from the CD. And it's just 2 minutes after the hour. I'm chilling. I don't see the phone number there yet, but that's okay, because that way it gives me a little extra time to tell you about Larry Carlton. Now, in doing research for him, I knew some things, of course. For those of us who have been involved in jazz for a little bit, you have to know some things about Larry Carlton. You know, 20 years, some 20 years, right? He started off 1992 or so with Foreplay, but trust me, it happened way before then as far as a career is concerned. Actually, he started back in the 60s, 1968, as a matter of fact. He had a little groove out called With a Little Help from My Friends. And this is a kicker. He was involved in a show. It was really a popular show back in the day, Mrs. Alphabet, and he was the co-star, Larry Guitar. Unbelievable. And it really didn't take him too long to be able to find the right folks and the right ears to hear his music. He was doing jingles. He has done films. He has done TV themes, worked with some folks that are just unbelievable when you think about that kind of like 1960s scenario all the way up to present day. And you would think that taking a break from from foreplay. Maybe he was thinking he was going to get a little rest, but no, no. And once you hear the scenario of what that means, because he's about to do a little chore, maybe he planned on this, maybe he didn't plan on this, but we're going to talk to him right now. Now, my intro, now I can do my intro because I already did half of it, but you should know that this man is legendary, and he's not only legendary, this is how he got to be. All of the A-listers that he has worked with from the 60s on, all of the glorious kinds of reputation he has developed through the years, all of that combined with the fact that his solo work has been instrumental in making other people rethink their forays into music. He has become an A-lister himself, beyond imagining the kind of success that somebody like Larry Carlton has had. And I'm just not going to spend any more time talking about him. I'm going to let him talk for himself. One of the premier artists in contemporary jazz. No matter what anybody says about what kind of jazz you listen to, no matter what kind of jazz people play, this is the name that often gets the top of the discussion, Mr. Larry Carlton.
Hi.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. After that intro, who wouldn't be? Thank you very much.
Oh, let me tell you something, Larry Carlton. I owe you so much. You know what? Growing up in Philly, because you know you're close to my heart after this CD.
I get it.
Yeah. But more than that, we were listening to a whole bunch of wonderful jazz, in Philadelphia back in the day. We had a great radio station, WIP, that would play all this great jazz. Mm-hmm. And it was an AM station. And, you know, when you're a kid, and you can speak on this, of course, when you're a kid and you hear the music that gets you, that makes you want to do something with all the good feelings that you had when you were little, it sticks with you. Well,
of course.
Here we go, fast forward. In the 80s, I'm working at a country station in Vero Beach, and here's Chet Atkins, who came out with Stay Tuned. And there you were, Larry Carlton, on that CD, and it rocked my world, changed me permanently, and I have you to thank. We can't thank Chet. He's in heaven now, but I'll thank him from a distance. But you have turned people's heads around so much. How do you feel about that?
Oh, gosh, Trish. For sure, humbled, blessed. You know, I've always done my own thing musically. And somehow the world has agreed. So I don't take a lot of credit, because honestly, a lot of musicians play what they feel, and the world doesn't embrace it. But for over, you know, the last 35 years or so, I've just played my heart out around the world, and people like it and still invite me. I leave tomorrow for Norway for almost 3 weeks to play my guitar. So I'm blessed.
You really are. Oh, my gosh. And, you know, Larry, in doing research about you, because I've been awash in Larry Carlton music for the past several days, your career, gosh, you hardly had any downtime when you started back, what, 1968? It's just gone from there.
It's been pretty cool, I'll tell you.
And the accolades that have come your way, and the genre exposition that you have done, that's my new terminology, because you have been so instrumental in making other people interested in jazz who really wouldn't have been interested unless it was you.
You know, I've heard that before over the years, and I think I can reflect and have some kind of a position on why I play like I play. And it's because, I think, of the era that I was brought up in. I was born in 1948.
Yeah.
Started playing the guitar in 1954 at 6 years old. So in the mid-50s to the late-50s, I'm hearing country music out in Los Angeles, but I'm also hearing doo-wop music. Doo-doo-doo-doo. Doo-doo. So all that bag is going into me, and I'm now approaching 10 years old. And then the 60s come along, and you get more Elvis, more Beatles, all these extra genres that I'm listening to, and I'm still a young, young guitar player. And at 14, I become interested in jazz. So I've got country influence, doo-wop influence, early 60s influence with the Beatles, and now I'm listening to jazz every day after school and from junior high school. So in the end, by the time I was 20 or so, I kind of had a Larry Carlton style, and it was because of having all of those influences.
And I'll tell you something else. One of the reasons why I gravitate to your music so much is because I lived in Nashville twice, and you live in Tennessee, and I always was aware of your presence. And I was on Music Row playing country, but I was always aware that Vince Gill would pop in from time to time, and I knew that you and Vince Gill were friends. And, you know, you lived in the neighborhood with Wynonna and Naomi Judd. We would hear all of these stories, these great stories about Larry Carlton. Oh, I played with Larry last night. Oh, so one of these days I'm going to meet him. So now you have influenced country music folks to a large degree with this amazing, as Joni Mitchell called at one point your style, fly fishing. Technique with guitar. Vince has delved into jazz. Steve Warner through the years has delved into jazz. Chet Atkins, he had a big influence, but thank God you are in Nashville because your presence, I don't know if you realize this, is huge in that neck of the woods.
Well, thank you for observing and telling me that. I'm really not aware of that. I just know that since Michelle and I moved here 15 years ago, we have been embraced by the local community that we chose to live in and by the music community. So we became comfortable very, very quickly when we moved to the Nashville area.
And I can totally understand that because those folks, once you are entrenched in the region, oh, my gosh, you're never alone unless you choose to be alone because there's such camaraderie and there's always a jam going on. And I don't even know if the Bluebird Cafe still exists anymore. Larry, does it?
I think it does, and they have their songwriter nights like they always have, you know, in the round.
That's so cool. Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big things, too, when delving into your background and taking stock of the many years that you were the A-list session guy, you worked with such amazing people, and I'm looking at some of the list. Sammy Davis Jr., Jerry Garcia, John Lennon, Michael Jackson, and they're all gone. When you look at Time to Reflect on the career that you've had, what do you think of your career in terms of how come it is, because you've had some drama in your life to be sure, how is it that you are still standing? And I love that you did Only the Strong Survive, because I'm always going to think of you in association with that song now.
Sweet.
It's a Jerry Butler song, to be sure, Gamble and Huff, to be sure, but it's always going to be a Larry Carlton song. You are standing, and you are thriving. That's amazing.
Yeah, life is good. Like I said earlier, I get to play my guitar around the world and have people love it. And, that, you know, you can tell when you watch me play how much I love it. So I have no complaints about my life. I've been very, very blessed to make music my entire life. I've never had any other kind of job. Even in my teens, I was making enough money playing my guitar to buy my car. I never had to work at McDonald's. It's just been a great, great ride, and it's still going.
It really is. And you thought that you were going to get a little bit of a break maybe after you decided to take a rest from foreplay. But my gosh, Larry, I think that you're going as strong, aren't you?
I am. And my 12 years, by the way, with foreplay, one of the highlights of my musical career. And personally, Harvey and Nate and Bob are just the greatest gentlemen And I enjoyed every minute I was with the guys for the 12 years. But I found out, I realized that I was starting to get in the way of foreplay because my career was going in another direction with a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
And so we decided, you know, I don't want to hold them back from doing as many concerts as they want to every year, trying to work around my schedule. So we agreed that, yeah, it's probably time, so they'd have the freedom to do what they need to do, and I could do the same. But it was a wonderful, wonderful 12 years.
Oh, well, I believe me, for those of us, and there are many people in the chat room today, by the way, who are listening to you, and, of course, folks will be listening to this when it's archived, we have followed you for such a long time, and some of us hang on to every note. It was a matter of all those years with foreplay and, what, 13 albums with the Crusaders?
Yeah, starting in 1971, which means I was 23 years old when I got the call to play with the Crusaders, and it lasted for a good 6-7 years.
And in case folks don't know, Larry Carlton here, not only a 4-time Grammy Award winner, but 19 nominations, which is pretty unheard of, Larry.
Yeah, I'm always surprised. It wasn't me.
Holy cow.
Just great. It's just great.
And I'm not too far behind you. I'll be 60 in October, so I have followed you a little bit more closely than a lot of younger folks who know about your career. So,
sure.
You know, the name Larry Carlton has resonated for quite a while in Philly and in where else I've lived, in Nashville, in Florida, gosh knows. You have a lot of fans in Florida. Why is it that you decided to pour your energy into Larry Carlton Plays the Sound of Philadelphia?
Yeah, that project, what a joy that was.
I'll bet.
The producer of that album is Billy Terrell, and he actually produced all of the tracks and with the background singers, the horns, the whole bit, and he had a singer in mind to sing all of those tunes. Well, that didn't work out to the way Billy hoped it would. So those tracks actually sat for more than a year. Billy wasn't sure what to do with them. And then my name came up, and they thought, well, maybe let's have Larry Carlton play the melodies on all these great songs. So my involvement was wonderful. I had all the music, all the background vocals, all the horns to create my sound with, and every song is a gem.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Had you always, I know that you had said, because we were listening to approximately the same music when we were coming up, you in Southern California and me on the East Coast. Were you always enamored of what Gamble and Huff have done?
You know, I always loved their songs on the radio, but I didn't actually ever analyze them.
Yeah.
And that's what was really cool about this project. When I listened to the original versions, now some, what, 35 years after they were cut, or 40?
Yeah.
They set a whole new standard in production by using strings, horns, all on a pop record with an R&B feel. I mean, they created this whole sound that I just enjoyed in my car on the radio like everybody else did and didn't pay much attention beyond that.
Isn't it amazing when you think about songs that stand the test of time? That's really a concept that's almost surreal. People are singing songs that were recorded and written, my gosh, from so long ago. Do you feel that maybe this is a new chapter for you? What would you be looking forward to a lot in 2012 that could be another dream for Larry Carlton to achieve?
Yeah, it's not so much about achievement. It's about having the opportunity to musically do something. And right now I'm putting together a project for Japan, and it was my idea 6 or 7 months ago I put this into motion. My first 3 albums on Warner Brothers, starting in 1979, really cemented my career in Japan, and those albums were huge. And the players on all of on those albums, it was Greg Matheson on keyboards, Abe Laboriel on bass, and Jeff Porcaro on drums. So I'm putting together the package without Jeff, obviously, rest in peace.
Yes.
But to go to Japan this summer and perform the songs from my three first albums with Greg and with Abraham and with the drummer.
Amazing. Amazing. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you talk about songs that have stood the test of time, especially, I can say, in Japan. I mean, Room 335 is like an anthem over there. It was such a big song. So it'll be great to play those songs with the original guys.
Oh, that's a wonderful journey, a rekindling of relationships. And those folks will go absolutely nuts. And you know that because those audiences adore jazz, and no matter what form you give it to them.
Yeah, and I can say this because I started going to Japan in 1974 was my first trip with the Crusaders. So I've been going to Japan for a long time. They are, in my opinion, the most loyal audience in the world. Their loyalty is not dependent on a hit record. It's not dependent on pop charts or jazz charts. It's really, in my opinion, their loyalty is for the artistry. And as long as I keep my artistry at the high level that I always have, they're fans for life because I don't let them down and they don't let me down. I so appreciate them.
And I'm so glad that you said that, Larry, because you could be instrumental in what you've just said to so many young jazz artists who get caught up in that box syndrome. The creativity that you have had through the years is completely unchallenged. You've always done your own thing. And what would you say to artists who are embarking in a career involving music? What's the most important advice you could give them?
The first thing that comes to mind is, what's your motive?
My
motive has always been the music. Even in my teens, I did not have dreams of being a star. I had dreams of being a jazz guitar player.
Wow.
Like my idols. And so I think, you know, over the years, I've witnessed a number of new generation players that seem like they want to be a star, and the music is just a way for them to get it there. And I think the passion comes from the music, not from the accolades. So, To the young guys, I do a lot of seminars around the world. And to the young guitar players, I always tell them to analyze your motive because you can't be passionate if you don't have the right motive.
God bless you. I hear that. And I know that you I talked to Toby. We communicated, and I'm very adamant about how much time you have. And I'm not going to keep you too much longer. We've played about three or four tracks from this fabulous CD, and we'll play one more when we take leave of you. But I have a question for you that maybe you don't get, and I'm just thinking as I approach this significant age in October, having never hit 60 before, and I'm trying to find my way around it. When you think about your inspirations that you just alluded to, and Joe Pass was one, and Wes Montgomery another, B.B. King, John Coltrane, Barney Kessel. Do you feel sometimes when you play, do you feel like there's some sort of anointing from above that you get from one of those greats that something has passed on to you?
Well, yes, I'm definitely one of the guys who gets to carry the torch.
Yeah.
Joe Pass in 1961, when he did his album Catch Me, set a whole new standard of bebop guitar. I'm just continuing carrying the torch for guitar, especially that, my career has allowed me to make so many musical statements that they become valid. So I'm proud to be the old man of guitar, if you will.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You are just Actually, I think of you now, since you are doing your own thing and you're going to be doing this Norwegian tour now. This is new blood for you, Larry. This is going to be such a great year for you, because you don't feel encumbered. You're going to be able to do your thing, and this new creativity is going to come to you. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you so much. I'm excited too. I get to go do it again.
That's so great. That's so great. Any final words that you would like to say to our audience? And I know that there are going to be legions of different kinds of jazz fans listening.
Sure.
What would you like to
sure.
say to all the people who have been supporting you through the years?
Yeah, just a huge thank you. I mean, I couldn't have a career like I have had and like I'm having without you all supporting me. And I mean supporting me for a long, long time. So thank you for that. And all of you, don't be afraid to visit me on Facebook. It's me answering and responding. It's not just somebody from the office. And I really enjoy seeing what you all have to say. So thanks again.
Oh, that's really nice to know. Thank you for sharing that. Larry, listen, you be safe while you're on the road. I know that big things are coming as far as a number of events in Norway, so be safe, and hopefully we'll see you in the summer. Maybe we'll even get a chance to get to Japan to see this marvelous event taking place.
Thank you, Trish. I've enjoyed this.
Thank you, Larry. We've enjoyed it, too. God bless you, and thank you for your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that's so great. Thank you again to Larry Carlton for spending a little time with us. He is, honestly, within a day or so, I can't believe he's even taken this much time, on the road, not on the road, on the plane to Norway. He's going to be playing, among other things, love this, the Troll Blues Festival in Norway. There's going to be several dates, and again, you heard him say, an amazing scenario in Japan unfolding this summer, so I'm so excited for him. You know what? Let's do this, shall we? Let's get to another track. We didn't hear this one from Larry Carlton Plays, The Sound of Philadelphia. And this is a tribute to Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. This is Backstabbers. Yes, it is, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. You know, of course, that we were going to play something by Etta, right? Miss Etta James. Born Jamesetta Hawkins, January 25th, 1938. Passed away January 20th, 2012. So she was just shy of her 74th birthday. God bless her soul. Let me tell you something. Usually, we would boo-hoo the passing of somebody. And, of course, we're all grieving because what a presence. She has been a style that spanned so many genres, blues, R&B, rock and roll, soul, gospel, jazz. Mid-50s, she started to do her thing. So many songs. I'd Rather Go Blind, At Last, which you just heard, Dance With Me, Henry. Man, it's just amazing. 17 Blues Music Awards, 6 Grammys, just an amazing career. And ordinarily we'd say, oh, we're so sorry that she's gone. Let me tell you something. That lady was in such pain. She not only had the effects of leukemia, she was bedridden for a while. And I remember when WSMJ, the smooth jazz station, was still kicking in Baltimore, we had this jazz festival that it wasn't a very good jazz festival. We should have stayed with Capital Jazz Fest, but that's a different story. We had this festival come from out of town, and Etta James was supposed to be one of the stars. And even then, this is going back to, what, 2008 or so? She couldn't attend because she had just been hospitalized, and she wasn't feeling well for a while. And on top of the leukemia, she was in pain, and she also had Alzheimer's. So let me just tell you that I am glad she is at rest. This lady has endured so much, as you know. And one of the things that is astounding, and my son was listening to this, because of course you want your children to know the truth about some of these musical legends that we revere so much. An amazing talent, an amazing lady, but she was the product of her times so much. You can understand, and we've talked about this not only on this show but on Cool Jazz Conversations, what it must have been like for a young African-American woman to make her stand, to be so strong, to make her stand in music, and to be thought of in ways that you would rather not prefer her to be thought of. Consequently, to ease the pain of attitudes and such back in those days, she turned to drugs. Not defending anybody who does that, but this was so common. And we know about the men, but for the women to have had this kind of scenario happen in their lives when they were venturing into the music industry, it was pretty heady stuff. So honestly, Etta didn't get really clean until the age of 50. You can imagine, and she has said this herself, when you get up in the morning and all you want is the fix, for her to get finally free from all of that at the age of 50, man, she was just getting a second wind. Bless her heart. Etta James, we are going to miss you badly. Love you always. Heard something else from Larry Carlton. From Larry Carlton plays the Sound of Philadelphia. I'm sorry. And that was an homage to Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. And we have another guest coming up, Ron Kearns, my buddy, the professor is what I like to call him. We're going to delve into some music from Ron. But I thought it would be kind of a cool thing to do this. And I was spending a little bit of time away from the chat room so I could do this. And I wonder if actually I have done it, and I have. I'm so glad. When you're trying to add something to the playlist and you're trying to do it in a time constraint, a little tricky. I wanted to go back to Larry Carlton if I could, because a lot of folks know Larry Carlton actually only from this, The Royal Scamp, Steely Dan, and Kid Charlemagne, especially for Beach and her birthday today. Happy birthday to you, BJ. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Why do you think we call it hybrid? This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Woo-hoo!
Thank you.
yeah. I love it. Oh, my gosh. We've heard a little bit about diversity in this show, haven't we? That's why we like to call it Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, who you just heard actually a couple of tracks. It was nice to be able to get to play all 10 minutes worth of Softly as in a Morning Sunrise from Live at Blues Alley with Ron Kearns, our second guest for today, and what you just heard is an original song. I just love that so much. Woohoo! We're going to find out about all of this, and I want to give an intro that is befitting this man because I have known him for a few years now, had a chance to interview him once when we were in a totally different scenario in a terrestrial radio station, and Ron and his lovely wife Lily came to visit. And I told him then, and I'll tell him now, I just like to refer to him as the professor because folks need to take lessons from this man in more ways than one. He is a producer. He is an educator. He's a professional saxophonist. He's a mentor to dozens and dozens, and he has the coolest thing on his Facebook profile. It says, being average is being as close to the bottom as it is as close to the top. I love that. Professor Ron Kearns, everybody.
Hi there, Trish. How are you?
Oh, and see, I was waiting to hear that voice. I'm better now that I heard you. How are you?
Uh-oh. I'm doing quite well, thank you.
I am so glad. It has been a wild show, and you are just what we needed. I promise you that's the truth, because your years of doing this and playing and the way that you play, oh, my God. A couple of people in the chat room have said, this is so good. We just really needed to hear you, specifically you. So thank you for being there.
Cool. Thank you. Look, you know, it's funny. As I was listening to Larry as he was talking, it sounded so much like my journey and the influences. And it's really interesting because one of the things that people always try to make it seem as if once you decide you're going to play a particular style, you're locked into that purest side of that style.
Yeah.
And people
yeah.
like Larry and I came along at a time when we were being exposed to all kinds of music and all kinds of great players. And it was our intention to set out about developing our own voice.
Yes.
And not worrying about what was the past, what was the present, or what was the future, just developing our own voice and let that take its course.
And Ron, honestly, I mean, yeah, it really did resonate what Larry said, and you and I have had this experience too because we're about the same age. You've got a birthday coming up in May, and I've got one in October. So we really did have it in a beautiful way in one instance when we were growing up because we had radio stations that would play a cross-section of different kinds of music, and it
exactly.
wasn't a box.
Exactly. The word eclectic comes to mind because you choose music from all genres, from all sides of the world and everything, and then you kind of make yourself into a composite of whatever it is and express yourself the way you want to express. You know, you listen to Blues in the Alley, which you just played, and Blues in the Alley shows that before Charlie Parker was my main influence on sax, Maceo Parker was, and that was an homage to Maceo with the style, but it also represented a night that I hung out in New Orleans at a place called Funky Butt, and so I heard blues done in a way that I had never really heard blues done with that kind of jazz flavor and that kind of New Orleans flavor and everything, and it affected me when I was playing at Blues Alley, because Blues Alley is a place of New Orleans cuisine. I decided to write a song that I thought would be fitting for that venue, as well as giving an impression of you know, my listening and my style and things that I enjoyed. And as you can hear by the reaction of the audience, it went over quite well with them.
Oh,
and
I love it.
They connected it. Yeah.
Man, I really do like this. Actually, when you and I were doing that in-person interview a couple of years ago, I got a few CDs, and it's just another source of pride because you live in the region, and folks are getting to know more and more that the people that sometimes get the attention on the national and international scale don't even compare to what is happening in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And you are one of those people I always think of, because anytime I hear you play on any of these CDs, I think, oh, man, so-and-so needs to go back to school.
Thank you.
That is so awesome to be able to know that that's the truth. And here you are. I have to let people know, you are a Grammy Educational Award winner and a Downbeat Excellence in Jazz Education winner. Tell us about that. I love that.
Well, as far as the Grammy goes, the Grammy Foundation decided that they wanted to support music in schools and get kids involved in developing the kinds of technique and the kinds of knowledge that they needed to carry into a professional career.
Yeah.
So they had this award that they would give to 50 schools across the nation, and you had to submit all of the things that your groups had done. You had to submit recordings and any other kinds of awards that you could get. And we were fortunate enough to win it three times and
wow.
become a Grammy partner. Each of those three times, you got $1,000, and for becoming a Grammy partner, we got a $5,000 grant to help us with our music program and to help kids and do things. And so we were able to use that for a lot of things. The Downbeat Award came because I had so many outstanding students that came through that it got their attention because as it is now, my former students read like a who's who on the jazz scene as well as the classical scene.
Yes, I do know that. Yeah. And how long have you been doing that? I mean, can you even assess how long you've been mentoring and how long you've been teaching music?
Well, 40 years. You know, you mentioned the fact that I'll be 60 in May. And so 40 out of the 60 years I've been working with young people. Working with young people keeps you young.
So, oh, my gosh.
So my 60 is not the same as somebody else's 60 because
oh, no.
for 40 of those 60 years, I was able to be around young, vibrant, creative people, and it just kind of keeps you on top of things.
Listen, Ron, let me just tell you what the chat room has said, and this will be your new mantra, as it has been mine. 60 is the new 40.
It is. Well, I've told people that before. When I was growing up, and I'm speaking for both of us, when I was in elementary school, someone who was 65 was just about ready to croak as far as I was concerned. They were old. You know, you talk about grandparents. Now, if you look at it, my mother is 94 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
And so when you look at it like that, you know, yes, 60 is the new 40 or at least the new 50 if you want to go 10 years less.
Well,
but people say it all the time, but age is nothing but a number, and that really is true because you can keep yourself as young as you want to keep yourself, or you can make yourself as old as you want to make yourself, and it's really all up to you.
And I believe that, but for women maybe it's a little different, and that's why I wanted to almost push it down people's throats that I was turning 60, because I don't know, like an epiphany in the past few months. It's so ridiculous to have survived and to have been living this long. I am not merely tolerating the age. I embrace it. Every nook and cranny, every line and wrinkle, my hair is not going to get bleached anymore. I'm letting it grow, so it's going to grow long and gray. I'm not going to cut it again. I'm going to be the hippie that I was always meant to be, Ron.
Oh. Look out, world.
Yeah, right.
Like we need you to get any more hip. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I appreciate coming from you. That's quite a compliment. When did you start to get drawn into music and want to get that out? You got a fever early on. When did you decide that you wanted to play saxophone?
Well, it's really funny because, you know, once again, I go back to your first hour. The people that you were playing were some of my influences. Wes Montgomery was one of my influences.
Oh.
My brother was a big jazz lover, and he came and brought two recordings that really influenced me. One was a thing that John Lewis did, called European Windows, and it was a classical jazz mix that he did with the Stuttgart Symphony Orchestra.
Love
and
it.
The other one was Jazz Samba with Charlie Byrd and Stan Getz. And
oh gosh,
those two recordings, Stan Getz sound and the playing between Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd, just really struck a chord with me, and I decided that was the kind of thing I wanted to do and the kind of sound I wanted to have. And interestingly enough, I'm releasing a CD that's given me a chance to go back to those roots.
Really?
Yeah. I have a CD coming out called Quiet Nights. And it's a combination of Brazilian jazz and straight ahead jazz, and Jim Hall and Paul Desmond did a recording with Latin things, guitar and sax, and of course Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd did a recording with guitar and sax, and so I decided to team up with a longtime friend Paul Wingo, and your friend. Mark Prince on drums,
oh, yeah.
And Kent Miller on bass, and we went into the studio and we put down Quiet Nights, and it's going to drop on February 1st.
Oh, that's why we needed this timing of this. This, my gosh, that's just a matter of days now.
Yeah, well, it happened by accident. I mean, you know, all this happened by accident, just like this being basically a guitar show with me as the token sax in the middle of the guitar magic.
That's right.
Well, it falls in place because this CD is the first time I've recorded without another horn along with me, and the first time I've recorded with a guitar instead of a piano.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really interesting. And honestly, you know, I didn't necessarily plan it that way. It just felt like it was the right thing to do. And I know that I knew that there is somehow going to be some serendipity involved in this. So you just said it because I really wanted to feature you as the primary sax person in the show. And I was so caught up with making sure that I wanted to do Carl Filipiak from Baltimore playing his guitar style, knowing that he was a fan of Wes Montgomery's, Larry was, and you say that you were. So there would be some connection somehow, some way, and then you just say this. That's pretty cool.
Right. Well, you know, Larry, Earl Klugh, and a few other guitarists of my time, put out some sounds that did the Wes Montgomery kind of tip of the hat.
Yeah.
Earl Klugh, of course, with his crossover stuff, and Larry with his, and all of those guys show why you can't be a purist or a particular musical snob, because when cats like that can play, they can play anything.
Yeah.
And you know, we both have the history with having done country western radio.
That's
and
right.
And between giving the news, I was a newscaster, and between giving the news and preparing for the news, I was listening, and I discovered that there was so much of a commonality between the music styles, because they would play Boots Randolph and all the other guys, Chet Atkins and all those guys. And I'd be listening, and those cats had some chops. And
oh, yeah.
They just happened to decide that they were going to play a particular style. But all of them could play whatever they wanted to play. And that was one of the beautiful things about going to certain festivals and certain gatherings. You get behind stage. I'll never forget one time we were playing for the Washington Area Music Awards, the Whammies.
Yeah.
And we were playing behind this young lady by the name of Gail Bliss. And Gail did the music of Patsy Cline and had one of the longest runs out doing that. And we were behind the stage with my buddy Stanley Turrentine. And they thought we were the jazz guys. And we pointed out, no, we're not the jazz guys tonight. Stanley is the jazz guy tonight. We're playing country. And of course, the folk looked at us like, wow, yeah, okay. Because they figured we were putting them on. And then when it was time for us to play, Stanley went out and he did the jazz thing. And when he came back off the stage, we went on the stage. And you could see the jaws dropping when it's Billy Ogilvy playing some country.
Oh my gosh, that must have been a trip. And it's just so wild how one genre influences another. Back when we were doing country, Ron, we had some really good artists that that stood the test of time. And there was no way you could have told me back in 1976 that I was going to get involved in country. But when I found out that with George Jones and Tammy Wynette and some of those artists, it was like R&B turned inside out. It was just a different color singing songs that were soulful.
That's what we called R&B with twang. That was our
R&B with twang.
R&B with a twang. And, it's funny because I was in school in Knoxville, and so I was hearing, as I said, all these Tennessee things, and it really did make you stop and listen, and you would hear the same song or the same words, but the only difference was the voice inflections and the, what we call the twang.
Yeah.
And you got beyond, as I said, you got beyond all the categories and things. You just started listening to the musicianship, and you found out what it was. Now, see, you being 1990 politically correct and calling it country, which is what they did to make it more suitable for commercial outlets and things. But what I was talking about in the 1970s, when I was doing the radio, it was country western. But it was country western, and it was important to get that country western thing because the Texas style influenced so much, and that's where tenors came out, because a lot of the tenor players from Texas were jazz, great jazz players, but they played whatever they had to play at the honky tonks and at the different spots and things. And so the Texas tenor style came out, and it was a very hot style. As I said, as I was talking to Stanley one time, he was talking about how important it was to develop your own sound, but have that big Texas tenor sound.
You know how powerful Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys were. Holy cow. Man, and they influenced a lot of, and I wish that current Nashville would get with the program and allow more creativity in the music, because it all sounds very similar to me these days. But if that Western sound were to ever come back into music, man, you listen to some of that stuff that is over 40 years old, actually over 50 years old at this point, and that Western swing sound is still so fresh that you could put it on current hip radio today and people's ears would pop.
Right.
I know, man. It occurs to me that probably we're going to sound like a couple of geezers talking about stuff that we remember. That's okay, though. Wow. So this is part of what you said, because you alluded to this the other day. You got a lot cooking. This is a big deal coming out. And you know what? Do you find that this whole notion of falling in love with Brazil again is something that other people are doing too?
Probably. I mean, I don't know how many people fell out of love with Brazil.
Right.
And Brazilian jazz. So the falling in love part is maybe going back to their roots and rediscovering. There is something about one of the songs that I put on the recording is "Girl from Ipanema," and "Girl from Ipanema" is one of those classics, and you don't hear it a lot anymore. But once you hear it, and once cats start getting into it, it's like, wow, why haven't I listened to this in a while? And so for that reason, as more players start playing things, you start getting more into it. And the whole bossa nova thing, it's just a whole whole new feel and fresh feel. Excuse me. And it's one of those styles that you can't listen to without your body swaying or without your feet tapping or something. And so as soon as you hear it, you know, you don't have to necessarily be a jazz lover to appreciate it or to love it. It's just the music seems to connect with you and speak to you in a way that you can't ignore what's happening.
And actually, Ron, I completely agree. I think that if I get this story straight, Charlie Byrd, to a large extent, was responsible for bringing that sound to light, because he was the one back in the early 60s, I believe, who went to Rio de Janeiro and got to know these players that were, it was just a natural scheme of things to hear songs sung in Portuguese and to get this methodology in playing. But there was something stirring in Brazil, and he was so turned on that when he came back to the States, he was the one who got in contact with Stan Getz and said, "Why don't you come over here? I've got some things I need for you to hear." Is that the story you heard?
Basically, yeah. It's the thing that you have to really point to as being the seminal recording that brought it to the forefront and kind of put everything together, because players were doing it, and a lot of players were experiencing it because they go to Rio and it was just so nice, and they bring things back. Excuse me. But when they did the Jazz Samba recording,
mm-hmm.
that recording put all of this stuff in one place for people to hear at one time, and
right.
Destinado and several other pieces that people just would listen to, one note samba, and people would listen to and just immediately fall in love with. Because as I said, you didn't have to necessarily like jazz or like Brazilian music. It's just hearing that combination just made you do things, and so a lot of jazz players were affected by it, because you can listen to songs like Blue Bossa, which is also on the CD, and you
yes.
can hear how Kenny Dorham and others were affected by the Brazilian flavor, because there's a difference between hearing the salsa and the bossa and some of the other things. And I'll never forget the first time I played in L.A. I went with the East Coast thing, you know, get everything out all at once. You got to get it all out at once. If it's on your mind, if it's under your fingers, you got to play it and get it out there. And you know, the cats looked at me as if to say, you know, just relax, just go with the flow, bro. You know. And they played some tunes that I had played and I thought I had played. And they were playing laid back, and it was, you know, it was just this California grooving kind of thing. And I was saying, you know, this is cool. I could get to really like this, you know. And it all came back to that sensibility of just kind of letting the music flow. And I liken it to sitting on a beach and just kind of throwing your head back and letting the breeze take you for a while.
Oh, my gosh. You're absolutely right. And we went to see, there was a couple of folks that I know that went to see a group at Andy Musique the other day in Baltimore.
I love that room.
Isn't that, nice? Yes.
You know, it's really funny, because as soon as you say that name, I think about the chairs. You know, everybody seems like they're sitting in a parlor.
Yes.
But the sound in that room is so great, and the piano in that room is so great. I don't think I ever used a mic there.
Really?
Because the acoustics are so good. I don't think, if memory serves me correctly, I don't think I used a mic.
Oh my gosh!
I just when you say that with that name, you know, just so Andy Musique, you know, everybody hears it. But if you're in the Baltimore area and you want to hear jazz in a good spot, that's the spot to go.
Yes, and you would have enjoyed it so much the other day, Ron, because we had two members of the group Verano here the other day, and Lynn Verano is the singer, and Ken Avis, who is from the UK, and Lynn is from French Canada. She was singing, and part of their repertoire, and they're certainly hybrid jazz, that's for sure. But they relish doing anything straight ahead. They relish doing anything Brazilian. The Brazilian sounds were what were so captivating the other day. When you're on a stage like that and you know your way around a Jobim song.
Oh, yes.
And you have the right vocals because anybody who sings it, it's going to be okay in my book. But if you have the chops to get the vibe of what the intent of those songs are supposed to be, you really are. You're absolutely thrown into the water somewhere on the coast of Rio, and yep. You are sipping some sort of drink that you have never sipped before. Man, it's such a good feeling.
Yes, it is.
I'm so tickled that you're doing this. That's great. So we've
done this because, as I said, it's dropping on February 1st. So you know, I wish I had talked to you before because I would have put more songs like that on. But I love the music of Antonio Carlos Jobim and Tom Jobim that season. And we did a show at the Strathmore Arts Center in Rockville, Maryland. And the show sold out before tickets went on general sales.
Wow.
Because people saw that it was a night. It was called An Evening of Jazz and Jobim. And when people saw the songs that we were going to do, they knew they wanted to be there. When they came and they sat there and listened, you could tell that even though it was March on the East Coast, you know, these folk were sitting on a beach, and we all just had so much fun. The group had fun, the audience had fun, and so that inspired the CD because we're going to be doing a similar show to that at Montpelier in Laurel, Maryland.
That's
March
great.
30th.
Wonderful.
And so we said, well, you know, we need to have some CDs or something for people to take this home with them because they enjoyed it so much. And since it's cheaper to take the CD home than it is to take the four of us home, because we all need a lot. You know, we wanted to make sure they have opportunity to take us home.
That's wonderful. And you couldn't have picked a better drummer for this project than Mark Prince.
Oh, of course. Well, you know, Mark is one of my former students.
Yes.
Students. And so, you know, he speaks to that history of education.
What a wonderful spirit he has too. Such a generous person. He is going to be playing with our friend Lori Williams tomorrow for her birthday concert at Blues Alley.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's played with her a couple times. In fact, when we were doing our recording, Lori had just finished up a couple of tracks on her most recent CD.
Yeah.
And Mark had come in and had done the drum work on two or three of those tracks, I think. So, yeah.
Definitely. And Lori was just on the show last week, and you get her into talking mode about Mark Prince, and she melts like most females do, because there's something about Mark that brings out something teddy bearish in us that we just want to hold on to and squeeze.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
That means when I go out and play, I better try to keep a bodyguard around Mark. Is that what you're saying? That
yes.
If I want him to be able to finish the gig, I better make sure that he doesn't get squeezed too much.
Well, please do that. And I just got the word here. I was thrown off a little bit. We're going to have you back, Ron, because we only have about maybe 60 more seconds. Thank God I played those two songs. Can we have you back when you do your gig in Montpelier?
Sure. You can do it right before so I can get people to come out again.
Please, can we do that? Can you promise me that we'll do it?
We can work something out, surely.
Okay, wonderful. I thought we had an extra half an hour, but we don't, and that's okay, because now it'll give me an excuse to have you back. Ron Kearns, thank you so much for spending time. I'm glad we got two songs in.
Thank you, Trish.
Thank you, Ron. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, here we go. I didn't know we had this amount of time. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you on Thursday on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.